On August 13, 1892, Benjamin Harrison was president of the United States. Legally enforced segregation divided citizens in the southern and northern states, and the Afro-American newspaper released its first issue. 115 years ago today, John Henry Murphy, a former slave, published the debut issue of the Baltimore Afro-American. Today, his great-grandson, John Oliver Jr., or Jake, is now the paper's chairman of the board and publisher. Jake Oliver joins us now from the studios of member station WEAA in Baltimore. Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
How on earth did your great-grandfather do it? I mean, many people were just trying to survive those early days after slavery. How on earth did he manage to publish a paper?
We are still trying to understand and figure that out, since at that time we surmised that most of the African-American or black population of this country probably didn't know how to read. And to attempt a venture of that nature in 1892 must have been just a leap of unimaginable faith. But quite frankly, we're pleased that he started it.
Do you have any idea, though, what gave him the vision? Did he ever write about it, write a memoir or anything, or talk about what his vision was?
My sense is that he felt that the black community in Baltimore probably was being, like many other black communities at that time, sort of abused by its inability to know exactly what was going on, and hopefully using that information to form the basis of coming up with an agenda to begin to assert those types of things that will evolve into a higher level of better form of life.
What kinds of stories did the early Afro-American report?
A lot was, you know, really internal about the community. You know, I mean, who was doing what, who was basically in business. But they also were very much focused on things which they felt needed to be changed. One of the first campaigns that the paper had was the campaign to integrate the black school system of Baltimore City in a way that would allow black teachers to teach in the black public schools. And that campaign was a very long and apparently a very hard-fought campaign, but it eventually ended up in black teachers finally able to teach black students.
Do you think that advocacy is still part of the mission of the Afro-American?
Absolutely. The moment it stops, I think we're out of business, because advocacy is a reflection of the level of additional work that still needs to be done. We've got to help our people understand what, in fact, is going on. You know, people, unfortunately, think too often that, well, Jake, you know, Brown versus Board gave you the rights and you got the 65 Civil Rights Act. What more could you want? And then you turn around and look a little bit closer and you realize there's a lot more that we want, because there's a lot more that's wrong. It just doesn't stop with one, you know, monumental decision or one monumental act.
How do you reconcile that, though, when you talk about some of what's wrong? A lot of the conversation I think that many ethnic communities are having these days with themselves is, on the one hand, there are the external wrongs, right? On the other hand, there are the internal wrongs. So how do you balance that, the desire that people have to put their best foot forward with your need to tell the truth about everything?
I honestly think that we will be doing our community a gigantic disservice by not showing them where they are doing wrong. Today, there's a lot of things about our community that really is wrong, and the wrong comes from our own problems. The level of violence is something that we have got to more or less come up with solutions to. Fact that we don't vote is something that we're going to have to come to grips with. But if it weren't for us, that is the black press, pointing out the importance of correcting these things, then we were, I think, probably are indeed sort of like relegated to permitting these particular wrongs to continue to hold us back even more so than those impediments which exist from the outside part of our community.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the 115th birthday of Baltimore's Afro-American newspaper, and I'm joined by the Afro-American publisher, Jake Oliver. You know, there's a saying, I can talk about my family, but you can't talk about my family. You know, there's this, the image of Baltimore in the national mind. I think on the one hand, it's kind of this image of, you know, the, what's that movie that John Travolta is in now? Hairspray. It was, you know, Hairspray. It's kind of, you know, fun, camp, let's all get together and have a party kind of thing. On the other hand, you've got the award-winning HBO series, The Wire, which frequently mm-hmm. depicts Baltimore as a very tough place, you know, violent, drug-infested. So how do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as correcting those images? Do you see yourself as what, interpreting those images or reinterpreting? Or do you ignore what other people think about your hometown?
No. What other people think about Baltimore is very important to me, and I think every Baltimorean who lives here. But point is that we have got to paint the picture of reality. I mean, Baltimore is all of the things that you basically refer to. You can't ignore them. You've got to basically deal with it, but you can only deal with it once you understand exactly what it is. And that comes from our and other people's attempts to try and define what that picture really is about.
What do you say to those who wonder whether there's still a role for the black media? I mean, there was a time when papers like the Afro-American were the only places, virtually the only places African-Americans could see their community in the news, except in the most negative light, right? But now there are other choices. The mainstream papers, the white newspapers, if you will, cover the communities. And there are people of color working in these places, sometimes in positions of significant authority. So how do you see your place in that media universe where African Americans have other choices of media?
Our mission is really continues to be to address the African American population of this country. You can pick up the New York Times and you can read some really good stories written by some very gifted black writers. But the question really remains is, to what extent is that a black perspective as opposed to the New York Times perspective? And I think that really underlines a major distinctive difference that continues to justify the role of the black press.
How do you deal with a question of leadership? It's often been in the past, I think many people have felt that mainstream papers are, but whether it's fair or unfair, a sense that mainstream papers or white papers, if you will, are very tough on African-American politicians. And some people have the sense that the black papers compensate for that by not being so tough on black politicians because they feel that they're going to get it from somebody else. They don't need to get it from them. But the consequence of that is that some people would feel that there isn't as much political competition as there could be in the black community because the community tends to sort of rally around the establishment or the status quo, whoever they tend to be, and that there isn't as much challenge to black authority as there could be internally within the black community. Have you heard that argument? Do you buy it?
Yeah, I've heard it. And I think in some instances it may be true. You know, I think it's the worst thing a black newspaper can do is to mother its politicians just because they're black, particularly in a world when I think it is true that black politicians have, I think, by and large, been addressed unfairly or dealt with unfairly. And I agree that, you know, that doesn't justify the black press or anyone else mothering these politicians. They have got to basically represent the people who they are basically voted into office by. And whenever we find that there are individual politicians who somehow lose sight of that, we don't hesitate. We just unload both barrels as much as we can.
Okay.
And just tell them, you know, I mean, if you do it wrong and if you can't justify what you do, then don't bother to come home because we're not going to welcome you.
Okay. Well, break it down. And finally, Mr. Oliver, I'm just trying not to get on your bad side. Let's see what I can do. You know, they say don't fight with somebody who buys his ink by the barrel, right? But speaking of which, the relevance of all newspapers, not just black papers, is being challenged now by the broad range of media sources that are now available on the internet, on satellite radio and so forth. And I just... How do you think your paper is going to be here 115 years from now?
I'm counting on it, primarily because of the fact the word you used was challenge. I don't view it as a challenge at all. I view it as an opportunity because the new media outlets, the media forms are, to me, probably the biggest, most exciting thing that probably has happened in my life because now for the first time probably in 115-year history, this newspaper can basically have a level field in a way that we probably never did have in the past. We can reach out to larger numbers of African Americans or people who have interest in issues relating to African Americans. So, no, it's not a challenge. It's an opportunity.
Well, good luck, Mr. Oliver.
Thank you very much.
Jake Oliver is the chairman of the board and publisher of Baltimore's Afro-American newspaper. He joined us from member station WEAA in Baltimore. Mr. Oliver, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for inviting me.